News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you are having a great day, whether you're listening live Saturday here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620, or listening on our podcast version. Whenever you get a chance to listen to it, hope your day is great, and I hope we can make it even a little better for you by bringing you up to date on everything that's going on in entertainment and pop culture. Joining me to do so, as he does so very often on the show, please welcome from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube, Jeremy Branch.
You always do catch people. Hey, everybody. You always do catch people up in the world of pop culture and entertainment news, but I feel like I kind of got left holding the bag here in the past couple of months, because I recently started watching this show, and I'm surprised that you never told me that it was good. I came home the other night, and my, you know, like, relationships are a lot about give and take, right? Like, we got to compromise, my wife and I, when we're watching stuff on television, and a lot of times my sensibilities just don't always line up with hers and vice versa. But I came in, and she was watching this show called Only Murders Left in the Building, and we started the episode back over, and it is really good, and I was wondering why you never told me to check it out.
Okay. Dude, first of all, I have sung the praises of this show for like 5 years now.
I don't recall that.
So I can tell I can tell how closely you listen to what I have to say, Jeremy. That's good to know. It's good to know. I adore this show. We're into the fourth season. I am a little bit behind on the fourth season that just started up a few weeks ago. So I'm a couple episodes behind, but I'm glad you're finally discovering the show. You got a lot of great stuff ahead of you.
You really have been singing the praises of it for quite a while now, and I'm always like, yeah, I'll get around to it, and then I inevitably end up watching some like documentary or something else. And the minute that I saw the pilot or the premiere episode, I was immediately hooked, and I'm only a couple of episodes in, but like, I'm really invested in this show. I'm actually going to sit down and check out a couple more episodes tonight. So if the listeners at home have not had a chance to check it out, it's Selena Gomez, Steve Martin, Martin Short, and tons of cameos from famous actors that you've seen all over the place over the years. And Martin Short is just still so silly. Like, I love that he has aged to where he's at now in his life, and he is just still so funny.
Well, you know, he and Steve Martin make such a good duo, and they've worked together in a lot of stuff. I mean, they're doing like commercials together now and everything. They've done a lot of like touring together, so they have such a good rapport. But I do think that like throwing Selena Gomez in the middle of that ended up being just this brilliant idea that I don't think anybody saw coming, and she really plays well off of both of them.
Yeah,
and brings in a completely different energy. And I got to be honest, like before this show, she was somebody that I hadn't paid that close of attention to.
Same.
And that was a mistake on my part. I knew she could sing and all that kind of stuff, but she's very talented and can be very funny too. And she holds her own with these two, you know, frankly, old dudes.
Can I ask, without any spoilers, obviously, we're just going to pretend as if nobody's seen it before, is the mystery element of it compel, like, when it's all said and done at the end of the season, is it a good mystery that pays off?
Every season has its own mystery, so you will get the you're watching season one, that will pay off by the end of season one.
Did you like the payoff? The reveal's good?
Yes, this okay. Series works equally well as a mystery series and as a comedy series. This does have an involving whodunit that you will enjoy throughout the course of the season, and it's awesome. Going to go off in directions that you don't expect it to. I mean, is it Knives Out? Not quite, but is it a very, very good whodunit? Yes, it absolutely is. And does it still manage to be very funny and have a lot of very interesting characters? It absolutely does. And they are able to draw. And I think some of it is the lure of working with this core trio.
Sure.
And, you know, maybe especially Steve and Martin, because they have such long careers and they're such icons, but they're able to draw such top talent to this show. And you see some of it in that first season, but it just continues to go on and on. I mean, you know, we've had Meryl Streep in the most two most recent seasons.
I was about to ask. Yeah. I thought that she might have been in it. So she sticks around for more than one season, huh?
She is at the very least in the first episode of the fourth season. So I have, okay. She comes in the third season, but she's at the very least in the first episode of the fourth season. So
if y'all are listening to this and you're looking for something entertaining and just really clever, highly recommend it. It is very good.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to catching up on the current season because, as I said, I really enjoy it. And the great thing about this series, too, is even if you lose a character along the way here and there, and you will because it is, you know, it's only murders in the building, the way that the storytelling structure is done throughout every season is the body that you see at the end in the first episode, you're still going to see that character throughout the season. We might possibly see them, you know, even in later seasons in some cases. So we've had a couple of very famous victims as we go on the series. Don't think that means that they're only in one episode. Don't think that means that you're never going to see them again.
One thing I didn't know about it, and all of that I had heard about it, is that it was the premise is that they're starting a true crime podcast, and so it kind of is able to satirize that in a fun and interesting way. Because, yeah, those true crime podcasts are just so incredibly popular.
Yeah, they do a great job with that, too, and that is, you know, pretty much the format of every season is a new season of the podcast. And they start out that they're only going to investigate murders that take place in their building, and somehow people keep ending up dead. It's kind of like, when I was a kid and Murder, She Wrote was on, and like my family loved Murder, She Wrote, but it got to be like, why do people move to Cabot Cove?
Yeah.
Because everybody that lives there dies. So it's, you know, why would you move into this apartment building that they live in, because when there's so many murders in this apartment building. So yeah, I mean, yeah, lots of fun actors in this, and lots of actors too that have been in this series and then have had their career expand as a part of being in this series. Probably most notably, Davon Joy Randolph, who is a recurring character in this series, and then of course went on to win an Academy Award for The Leftovers. But a number of the like offbeat characters that you meet in the show that you may not have known who the actor was when they first started in the show have gone on to have stronger careers. And I think part of it is that this show has raised their profile.
Yeah,
so,
sure.
They don't hire anybody that doesn't know what they're doing in this show. You know, they really do a great job in casting this, whether they're casting people, you know, like Tina Fey is a recurring character in the show. I mentioned Davon Joy Randolph. We've seen people like Paul Rudd come along and Meryl Streep. And you see, there's also been in every season so far, there's been at least one famous person playing themselves. So we had in season one, we had Sting show up as himself and as a recurring character as himself. Season two, we had Amy Schumer. Season three, we had Matthew Broderick showing up as himself. And they really are having fun with this conceit in season four, because in season four, we have Hollywood gaining interest in this podcast and signing to make a movie based on the podcast. So we meet the actors, the real life actors that are going to be playing these three characters.
Oh, that's fun.
So we have Eugene Levy to play Steve Martin's character. We have Zach Galifianakis to play Martin Short's character. And we have Eva Longoria to play Selena Gomez's character, because they decided it was too weird for a 20-something to be hanging out with these two old dudes. So they aged up her character. So we get to see these characters playing themselves, these actors playing themselves, playing the actors that have been cast to play these characters. So that's a lot of fun. I think you're going to have a lot of fun with this show, and I know I certainly have. We've got to take a break. Back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Thank you. spell is cast, how long it lasts, I cannot divine. The road is there, and so I dare to risk this heart of mine.
AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube. And Jeremy, we are solidly into the spooky season, possibly my favorite time of year. I'm a big fan of Halloween and everything Halloween related. And this year, our friends at Marvel and the Marvel Cinematic Universe and Disney Plus have decided to give us a new series that's very appropriate for this time of year. It's called Agatha All Along. It follows Agatha Harkness, who we were introduced to in WandaVision a few years ago, who is the witch who was kind of behind everything in WandaVision. And at the end of WandaVision, as you probably know, and if you didn't, spoiler alert for five-year-old series at this point, something like three-year-old series, something like that. But at the end of the series, she was left trapped in this small town of Westview, New Jersey, under the belief that she is Agnes, the nosy neighbor of the neighborhood, and without any power. And so this is a series following up on Agatha and her struggles to get her power back, and where that leads her, which it leads her to, as you hear in the song, the Witch's Road. Which is this world is this road that a coven of witches travels with the, and if they can survive it at the end, they will be rewarded. So that's kind of the premise for this series. We're about halfway through the series. We had the six episodes out to date. Jeremy and I are both a little behind on this, so we're going to kind of stick towards the first few episodes. But we're just past the halfway point. They're going to get the whole series out before Halloween, the week of Halloween. We'll get the final two episodes. We got the first two dropped at once. The last two will drop at once. I think that dropping the first two at once was a good idea in this one, because the first episode very much dealt with the fallout from WandaVision. It was very much in that same vein as WandaVision. WandaVision, you know, every episode was kind of parodying a different era of sitcoms. And this one was, this very first episode was straight up a parody of the show Mayor of Easttown, with Agatha as a police detective who is investigating a dead body, which, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, was, of course, Wanda Maximoff, the Scarlet Witch, the person who left her there. And that's part of why she's starting to break out of this illusion that she's been placed in, because Wanda's gone. So a goodly portion of this first episode is dedicated to being a parody of Mayor of Easttown. And then we go on the actual road from there. What did you think of that, first of all, Jeremy? I know you got a hot take on the series overall, but I wanted to stick just that first. Did you think like that going into the whole parody of a TV series thing again worked?
You are right that it was a smart decision to release the two of them back to back. And Agatha All Along is in a pretty tough situation for me in particular, because it's kind of a double-edged sword, right? Like, what I loved about WandaVision was those first several episodes where they were kind of doing the parody of a TV series. I thought that was really clever. However, to do it again in a new series, it's a little stale. It doesn't feel as fresh or as unique as it once did. There was definitely entertainment value in it. I thought it was clever. it wasn't quite landing for me in the same way. And I wonder if it's just that it's a hat trick that we've already seen before and it felt just a little bit recycled to me. It's episode two where you get a better understanding of what this series is and its own identity and what makes it different from WandaVision. And it's got a great cast. I love Catherine Hahn. I think she's fantastic. She was definitely the standout as far as new characters are concerned in WandaVision. But I just haven't quite, I can't get the rhythm of it. I feel like the execution is just not quite hitting in the bullseye zone for me.
Well, see, I'm surprised to hear you say that because I am absolutely loving this series. I think, first of all, you mentioned the cast is great. Let's talk about that for a minute. Not just Catherine Hahn, but in this great antagonistic role, you've got one of my all-time favorites, Aubrey Plaza, showing up in, I guess is like Agatha's frenemy is the best way to put it.
Sure. I'm a huge fan of hers as well.
Or at least as we've seen so far. And there's the implication maybe there that she was more than a frenemy. That maybe
this is the gayest show that Marvel's ever done.
That maybe maybe they were lovers, but that's that they haven't overtly said that. So this is something that I think a lot of people are reading into it, but that may or may not actually be there. But then you have this coven that Agatha has to gather around her because you can't walk the witch's road alone. You have to walk the witch's road with a coven, and as it's explained to the person who kind of is the driving force behind all of this and the person that helps break Agatha out of the spell, who we just know right now as the teen, because there's a spell been cast on him so that he cannot, nobody can perceive who he actually is.
But we know.
We think we know. There's definitely a mislead thread that's going on here too, to where it may be leading you to believe that it's another character. But we think this is Billy. We think this is a somewhat grown up, he's still a teenager, but some more grown up version of Wanda's son from WandaVision. That's the assumption that everybody's making. Let's look back at WandaVision though, and remember that everybody was assuming that Mephisto was behind all of this.
Yeah, those and people it was were idiots. Weeks,
yeah, but we speculated on it too, Jeremy. So are we idiots?
I never said that. Roll it back.
I don't know that that's true. I don't know that that's true. The rumor now is that we are going to get Mephisto in a Marvel series, but that it's apparently going to be in Ironheart.
That makes sense.
That's the rumor that's the character that Sacha Baron Cohen is playing in Ironheart. So we'll see if that's true. Who knows? Maybe we'll see him show up in this series before the end. Who knows? But, fans are going to fan. Fans are going to speculate. They're going to come up with theories. They're going to, be right, be wrong. There's also the implication here that this character could be the son that Agatha lost, Nicholas Scratch. So
that makes sense too. I hadn't heard that.
Yet. Yeah. I mean, they're definitely planting seeds to at least make you think that that's a possibility. Now, do I think that's where they're going to go? I'm still leaning very heavily toward it being Billy, but at any rate, this teen comes along and, inspires Agatha to walk the road to get her power back. And she explains to him that as long as there's, there's always within 3 miles of where you are at any given time, enough witchy adjacent people to form a coven. So she goes out and drafts this coven, and she, it's an all-star group of women here. Broadway legend Patti LuPone and Cesare Zameda, who I think most people maybe probably remember best from her time on Saturday Night Live, but has been in a bunch of other stuff. Deborah Jo Rupp returns from appearing in WandaVision. Great comedic actress. And, of course, I've now forgotten the name of the last actress that makes up the group.
But, yeah, I don't have it in front of me right now.
Yeah, and I'll check on that in just a moment. But we now are following these women down the road. And one of the things I really enjoy about this series is while we are dealing with some characters that are established characters from the comics, they are not necessarily the most well-established characters from the comics. So they're able to play with them a little more. And another thing is that I don't think this series is as driven by the overall MCU of it all. It's not very superhero-y. It's very much a dark fantasy series. And that allows it to get, kind of go off in its own direction. And I think they're having fun and telling a story that we haven't seen before. And if there's one thing that I think Marvel's been accused of, is telling the same story over and over again.
Yeah.
And
her name is Ally Ahn, by the way.
Thank you.
But you're right. Like that, and that should be, there's merit in doing something different. To me, while it does feel like it has stepped out of the MCU in terms of like the lane, it feels like it kind of stepped into like Hocus Pocus Land or Halloween Town or like something more traditional Disney. And I'm a Disney fan. I'm a Marvel guy. Historically going back, I like pretty much everything Marvel does. And I'm not saying this is bad. It's just missing me and kind of veering into the take territory is like, there's always these things like the new progressive Marvel thing is getting review bombed and people don't like it because it's woke or, you know, there's always these accusations leveled and I think there's validity to it a lot of times. When I look at Agatha, though, it's sitting at about 80% on both fans and critics side of things. So this isn't a show that people are hating because it's the gayest Marvel show of all time or anything like that. And I certainly don't dislike it because of the social aspect or elements in it. But what I do just get bothered by is like they studios and not just Marvel, but they throw minorities in front of all criticism to where I almost feel obligated to like it so that I'm not a bigot. And that's like a frustrating place to be at when I feel like if you just have strong stories and strong execution, people will rock with you most of the time. There are always going to be those people that don't, but there's just such a wide net cast where like if you have a dissenting voice, then all of a sudden you must have a problem with it because it's the quote unquote gayest Marvel show. And I think that's annoying.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit more when we come back. We got to take a break. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube, and we are catching up with Agatha All Along on Disney Plus. Very appropriate show for the Halloween season, and one of the great songs that was used in that series. One of the things I like about this series is the end of every episode has a little song over the opening credits that, you know, ties into the episode and to the show. And that particular song, Heads Will Roll by the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, just really, really works at the end of the episode that it appears in, which I believe was the end of episode three. I also had Donovan's Season of the Witch in there, and we've had they've had some fun with the music. to say nothing of the song that is original to the series, The Ballad of the Witch's Road, which you've heard like three or four different versions of now. So having fun with the music in the show as well. Now, before the break, Jeremy was kind of talking a little bit about kind of resenting the notion of putting minorities in the forefront in the series to prevent the series or to kind of immunize the series from criticism. Is that a fair way to put it?
That's a very fair way to put it. And I think it is a broader topic than specific to this show. And maybe part of my critique is not so much founded towards the show, but yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Here's the thing. But I don't really get the feeling that's what's going on here. I mean, as of right now, we only have one character that we know is gay in the show. Like, yeah, there has been the implication that maybe there was a past relationship between Agatha and Rio, that's being the characters played by Catherine Hahn and Aubrey Plaza, but it hasn't been overt. The only character that we know is gay, and we only know he's gay because he got a phone call from his boyfriend, is the teen, and a call that he didn't answer. So it's not like that. When you say it's the gayest show ever, it's not like there's been two men or two women kissing in it or anything like that. You know, it's been very subtle. And I don't think that I haven't seen that kind of, I don't like it because it's woke stuff going on with us. Like, I get where you're coming from, and in a broader perspective, I can see where that comes from, but I don't see that here. The cast is a little bit ethnically diverse. We do have, an actress of African-American descent. We do have an actress of Asian descent. We have an older woman in Patti LuPone. So there's a diversity of ages and a diversity of races a little bit. And yeah, at the forefront, the main characters in the show are all women. But like, I don't get the, if you don't like it, it's because you hate women. Like, I don't feel like anybody's saying that.
You never watched Chucky, did you?
No.
So Chucky also uses the song Heads Will Roll, and of the three lead characters, the male lead and his boyfriend are openly gay, and it explicitly deals with those kind of things. And maybe because it's horror and it's a little more niche, there's not pushback, and I really enjoy that show. And to your point, there is in regard to Agatha, there's a spectrum of women, and I appreciate that. And I'm trying to figure out where this quote of it being Marvel's gayest show originated. I don't know if it was just a journalist or somebody that was doing reviews, or if it was something that was kind of seeded out to the public via the creative team behind it.
In fairness, at the same time, like I off the top of my head, I'm not coming up with a lot of other characters that have been in Marvel TV shows or movies that are jumping out at me as being openly gay.
No, there's like, not any. By default,
I'm sure I'm forgetting one or two. I'm sure they're out there, but I'm not. Like the main Marvel characters that I can think of that are gay characters, I don't think have been in Marvel Cinematic Universe properties yet.
Joe Russo or Anthony Russo played a maybe, maybe not gay guy in game.
Yeah, no, they did establish that character as gay. But again, that was like a character that appeared in one scene and wasn't a...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So the one marginalized group that they haven't exploited yet for promotional purposes, I think, is gay people. And so that's the kind, it's not coming from a place of like, I'm not mad about it. I just find it so transparently pandering that it's like eventually we're going to run out of those things. And then all you have to stand on is whether or not your stories are good and engaging. And obviously that's completely subjective. You like the show, and that's 100% valid, and all of the different ingredients are working for me, but it's not coming together in a way that's like working for me. If that makes sense.
But do you feel like they're marketing the show at Look at Us, We're So Brave, We're Doing Gay Characters? Because I don't.
Yeah, I do.
I don't at all, because first of all, I don't think they've actually come out and said that. And second of all, I don't feel like it's anything that's driving the plot. I think it just happens to be, here's these characters and they may or may not have a romantic relationship. Like, I don't feel like, you know, I don't even feel like that's a driving force between these characters. Like, the driving force between Agatha and Rio is an enmity. And we don't know what the cause of that enmity is. Like,
yeah.
I mean, I don't feel like this is at all being sold as, look at us, you know, we're so progressive. And I can't think of any Marvel show that I or movie that I think has done that.
Let me go down the list of articles that I've got in front of me. First, IndieWire, Aubrey Plaza says Agatha All Along better be the gayest Marvel show, to the point that we were just now talking about. There's not really any other gay Marvel content other than this. Out Magazine says Marvel is finally entering its queer era. MSN, Marvel's gayest offering yet. Is Agatha All Along really Marvel's gayest show via movie web? Games Radar, Agatha All Along sneaks a lesbian love story into a spooky superhero show. Den of Geek, Agatha All Along is the gayest Marvel show yet. Entertainment, Agatha All Along creator infused the show with joyous, dark, resplendent queer energy. It's like, it's...
So those are headlines, but is that a perception that people that are writing about the show are bringing to the show, or is it a perception driven by the people that actually worked on the show? And some of those headlines when you say Aubrey Plaza, when you say the show creator, yeah, okay, clearly they said something along those lines. But there's a whole industry, and frankly, we're part of it, that's devoted to hot takes.
Yeah, no, 100%.
And a hot take is not necessarily factual.
No, you're absolutely. And it's hard to say if this is something that's been perpetuated just by the news cycle, or if this was, and even if it was the creator's intent to work this kind of stuff organically into the story, and then the first journalist stands up and says, I noticed that this is really gay for a Marvel show. What are your thoughts on that? Then all of a sudden it frames the whole conversation differently, and it kind of becomes the Leviathan where, like, everything is feeding off of itself and growing into a narrative. But I almost wonder who seeds those thoughts originally. When I look at something like, and I loved it, Shang-Chi, though, for example, our first Asian character, Black Panther, our first headlining black superhero, and it just goes all the way down the list, and I am not opposed to representation, not at all. It's just the way these media narratives get picked up and then conflated into where this show has become an identity rather than its own what it actually is about, which is what you're talking about.
Right. But
so maybe I just need to unplug from the headlines.
But that becomes, it becomes the tail eating the dog. Or the tail, yeah. The tail wagging the dog, or the snake eating its own tail. You know, it's that thing of which came first. Did it start out as look at us, look at what we're doing, or did it start out as we're telling this story? This character happens to be who this character is, and then the zeitgeist leapt onto that and turned it into. And I don't get this doesn't feel inorganic to me. There are absolutely examples of where it's look at me, look at me. I don't get that feeling with this show.
No, it just has a gay character in it, and it's like kind of musical theatery and got Broadway and theater people in it. That's kind of intrinsically a little bit gay, and that's okay. You know what I mean? Like, I'm good with that. I like musicals quite a bit. I just wish that it wasn't the first thing that people see when they see stuff, but maybe it's not. Maybe it is me, and that it would have slid by under the radar, and we wouldn't even have this conversation had it not be for me in bringing it into it, right?
Yeah, well, we'll talk more about this as the series goes along. We've got to take a break. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. We'll be right back. News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube, and we're going to move away from witches now and into scary clown territory. You definitely know that it's Halloween time if we're talking about scary clowns. And beyond just scary clowns, the reason I bring up scary clowns is because I think we've had conversations before, Jeremy, about like the icons of horror movies.
We have.
And how, you know, we had that first generation with the Universal Monsters, with the Frankenstein's monster and Dracula and the Wolfman and the Invisible Man and the Gill Man and, you know, all those classic, you know, Universal Monsters. And then you had that kind of the next generation in the 70s and 80s. With Leatherface and Michael Myers and Freddy Krueger and Jason Voorhees, you know, to a lesser extent, Pinhead and Chucky and some of those. And I think we've had some conversations in there about like maybe some others that maybe deserve to be included and whether they fall in with that group from the 70s and 80s or not. But characters.
The craziest thing just now happened. I hate to railroad you, but I was looking at my Doug Bradley Pinhead autograph over on my wall. And a single tear just now came out of his right eye when he said he didn't know. It's wild. It's spooky anyway.
Because I said lesser extent.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, characters like Ghostface from the Scream franchise, I think, you know, certainly has become an icon. And you can argue about some of the others, like maybe the Killer Clowns from Outer Space. You can argue about Jigsaw or Sam from Trick or Treat, I think is, you know, I think there's certainly... Some of that has to do with when there's enough like merchandise and stuff like out there to where everybody recognizes
this. It just now happened again. I'm sorry to keep railroading you. Tony Todd, the autograph of Tony Todd that I'm looking at right now, a single tear just now rolled down his right eye.
Well, I can't say his name too many times because if you say Candyman too many times, you're going to get gutted.
That's fair.
So at any rate, I think we've gotten to the point now where there is... There's a new character, a relatively new character, that I think is joining this pantheon. I think at this point we're now getting our third Terrifier movie has just come out, and there is so much merchandise out there for Art the Clown. Is it fair to say you think Art the Clown from the Terrifier franchise is joining this pantheon now?
Yeah. And we did have a conversation about this on a previous episode. Y'all definitely go back and check that out. And for no other reason to hear that I had conviction about this. I was like, Art is coming up in a big way. This is going to be something that I think sticks with people. And like you said, this is only the third outing. And to be honest, I wonder if Art the Clown is even bigger than the Terrifier franchise, because let's be honest, nobody saw All Hallows Eve. Nobody even really knows that movie exists. And Art is in that, though he is portrayed by a different actor.
Yeah, Art's
the original Terrifier.
He's shown up in one or two other things besides the three Terrifier movies. That's true. Well, and you know, I'm at the point too where does there have to be more than one movie for somebody, for a character to become an icon? Because, I mean, like I mentioned Sam from Trick or Treat. There's only one Trick or Treat movie.
It's a good point. It's a very good point.
But there's,
one Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah, I mean, you get to the point where there's so much other stuff that involves that character. And I think that's just as intrinsic to making that character an icon, which is why I'd kind of argue maybe against a character like Jigsaw versus, I mean, there, sure. And there is some stuff out there. But the stuff that's out there is mainly it's Billy the Puppet. It's not Jigsaw.
Yep.
You know, versus, you know, a character like Sam or a character like Art. But, like, you got to bring me up to speed even because I actually haven't seen any of these movies yet. So what's the deal with Art the Clown?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked. Art the Clown is a mute, you know, he's definitely a performance based on some of your very classic, like, silent film portrayals. So very... physical performance. He's so unnerving, and the sadism that he exerts on his victims is just a whole different level. It's like nothing we've ever seen before. And Terrifier 2 was released around Halloween last year, and it ended up being just a breakout success. in a way that nobody expected. It was supposed to have a very limited run and then ended up sticking around a little bit longer than that. It's like a 2.5-hour movie. Some of the gore, you know, slash kill sequences in it are just really boundary pushing. And it does cross the line of good taste. Like, if you're a person that accidentally happened to see a Terrifier movie and you absolutely hate it, I get it. But if you're somebody that appreciates the absurdity of that kind of violence, or you're somebody that, like me, loves VFX and just really sees the artistry in the, you know, no pun intended, but the artistry in the kill sequence, I think you can have a really good time seeing this. I only saw Terrifier 2 in the theater. Didn't see the other ones in the theater. Don't even know that they got a theatrical release. But seeing it with a crowd and the way that people react to what's on screen is genuinely just a lot of fun.
So what do you think it is about art that has kind of grabbed people's attention?
It's the aesthetic, right? I mean, like you said, there's a storied history of the scary clown, this figure that's supposed to be endearing to children, yet there's something unsettling about it. They're hidden behind a facade, like what their true intentions are is a little bit hard to read. Where with somebody like Art the Clown, he's obviously evil. I mean, you look at him and you're like, that's an evil clown right there. But I think that's it, Julio. Like, I think it's really just as simple as it's iconography that Americans recognize through the history of things like Pennywise and the Killer Clowns from Mars and the movie Clown House and Fun House. And there's been a lot of them over the years. And I think we just really like that.
What do you think it is about clowns in general that lend themselves to this scary clown phenomenon?
Yeah, I think it's really the idea of perverting childhood innocence in the same way that Five Nights at Freddy's or Child's Play with Chucky. It's these things that we look at, even the clown in Poltergeist, it's these things that we look at as being not only harmless, but geared towards children. And then with the clown, understanding that there's an actual person behind that, and we don't know the person behind the makeup. We see the smile, and that in itself tells us how to feel about them. But then you think about characters like John Wayne Gacy, and you're like, wait, these clowns could be anybody, and they could be super sinister, and we allow them access to the most vulnerable humans there are, you know?
Well, and that was something I was going to bring up to clarify. John Wayne Gacy was an actual real person and not a fictional character.
Sorry.
This was a serial killer who was a clown. You know, so I mean, I wonder if that's something that is an influence on all of these scary clowns over the years too.
What do you think about art in particular, and then about the clown?
I mean, I think that the visual is certainly striking, and I can understand from a visual standpoint why the character has resonated. I haven't seen the movies, so I can't speak to how the character works within the films themselves. But I think it's absolutely fair to say that that he's become an icon.
Yeah.
I mean, when you get to the point where you got your own animatronic sold in the spirit store, I think, that's pretty iconic at that point.
Are you interested in watching these movies?
I am. I just haven't quite gotten around to it, and I don't want to, like, start with the third one.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I even saw an article where they were talking to the creator of this franchise, Damien Leone, who's written and directed all three of these films and wrote and directed a couple of short films with the character before that. Where he has said, you could probably get away without seeing Terrifier 1 first, but you really do kind of need to see Terrifier 2 before you see Terrifier 3. So, I need to track him down. I would like to see him. Not in the least, because we actually have these folks coming to town. So if you are a fan of the Terrifier franchise, if you've gotten into this phenomenon, the creator, as I mentioned, Damien Leone, and also the star, David Howard Thornton, who plays Art the Clown, are going to be here in Pensacola in February for PensaCon. So February 14th through 16th, you're going to get a chance to meet them and maybe talk to them and find out why they think this has clicked the way that it has, and why they've had so much success. And really, it's so it's cool. Also very interesting that this has come from a very, very indie standpoint. This is not a studio project. This is not some IP that somebody drew up. It is, you know, they have not sold it out to a studio. And in fact, all the studios are now coming to them saying, how are you doing this? And
yeah.
I think that's that in and of itself is fascinating. I really respect that. So you'll get a chance to meet both of those guys in February. And I believe David Howard Thornton is even going to be doing in costume photo ops as Art the Clown. So if you ever wanted to have your picture taken with the real Art the Clown, you'll get a chance to do that. So we'll look forward to that at Pensacon in February. You can get your tickets at pensacon.com. We are done for this week, but we will see you soon. Until then, you're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.